From Hollywood, The Tonight Show, starring Johnny Carson. This is Ed McMahon, along with Doc Severinsen and the NBC Orchestra, inviting you to join Johnny and his guests, Charles Nelson Reilly, Bo Derek, Pete Fountain, author Mickey Zifrin, and from the San Diego Zoo, Joan Embry. And now, ladies and gentlemen, here's Johnny.
I still get chills when I hear that. Mike Thomas is the co-author of a new book about Johnny Carson called Carson the Magnificent, and Mike joins us now. Mike, I love that intro, first of all, because Ed gives me chills, but Charles Nelson Reilly, Bo Derek, and you have
classic
the woman.
Carson.
I know it is. And four guests, too, right. You know, on the show. It's just crazy. Man.
Perfect intro. Thanks for playing that.
So explain this to me. So Bill Zemme started writing this book, and then he passed away, and then you took it over. Is that right?
I did, yeah. He was working on it, I would say, off and on since he did a profile of Johnny for Esquire in 2002. So it really started then. He worked on it up until 2013, and then he was diagnosed with cancer, very, very serious stage four, and pretty much anything but survival was out the window at that point. So he stopped working on it. It sat on the shelf for 10 years. And then after he died, his editor and publisher asked me to finish it.
If people don't know Bill Zemme, legendary writer, legendary.
Yeah. And my mentor, you know, I worked with him for 3 years on other books. So I learned from him, and then it came full circle, and I ended up finishing the last book that he started.
I mean, no pressure, but you're taking over a book from Bill Zemme. Plus, you're writing about the king of late night, this guy who was so private behind the scenes. We knew that he was married, what, four times?
He was married four times. Yeah. Johnny liked to be married. They didn't always work out well. Actually, they did never work out really well. But yeah, it was daunting. You know, I took about a month when his editor on the book, Random House, bought the book initially. And it's John Karp. So John went from Random House to his own imprint. And now he's the CEO of Simon & Schuster. And so when the CEO of Simon & Schuster calls you, you listen.
Answer.
You answer the call. And you listen. And so I said, John, yeah, I don't know what Bill has written. I had never read what he had written. I said, I don't know what reporting research he's collected. So I spent a month going through all that stuff to figure out what I had and what I had to work with to continue Johnny's story. Because, you know, John just said, I don't need you to reinvent the wheel, but I need you to take Johnny to the end of his life and wrap this book up. And so after a month, I came back and I said, okay, I think I can do it. Bill's got more than enough. In fact, I almost died a couple times going into a storage unit.
Oh my gosh, I can't imagine.
There's so much stuff in there. Well,
did you feel like a pressure to match his voice and writing style? Or did you just say, you know what, I'm going to come in and I have to be me for the rest of this book?
Yes, and that was up front. I talked about that with the editors. It would have been all parody to try to ape Bill's inimitable style. So some people notice, some people don't, but yeah, part six picks up with me. Bill wrote everything but the prologue up to part six, and so that was my part. And I just write how I write, you know. It's more of a linear story. It's the prose is a little plainer. So I'd be interested to know if you can see the line of demarcation.
Well, let's talk about Carson, man. Johnny was the king, but he was so private behind the scenes. I know that we said he was married four times, but what did you find out? What were you surprised about that you found out about Carson?
You know, I had heard a lot of stuff about Carson, about, you know, the fact that he was a very private guy. And he admitted that he was almost shy, introverted off the air. On the air, impossibly cool. Off the air, he didn't have a lot of friends. He wasn't good in small social situations. You know, like three people was tough, 3 million people, that was just fine. It was like,
isn't that crazy?
Was Carson.
Yeah.
But I think that's not
bad.
Yeah, but a lot of performers, I think, are like that, don't you? I mean,
and that's why he drank to relax him in those social settings, right?
Yes, and I'm just assuming that was part of it. He drank a lot more heavily back in the day, you know, when he and Ed used to booze in New York. But, you know, even in the late 70s, he was kind of tapering off there. I remember him telling, 60 Minutes, you know, I wasn't a good drinker I didn't drink well.
I remember
so that
line. That is such a classic line. I remember that.
Yeah, it's very Carsonian, right?
Right.
I didn't drink well. I found out I didn't drink well. So, but I think the things that surprised me mostly were Johnny's sort of emotional life. Like, he didn't wear his heart on his sleeve, but in the moments when he became emotional, those were kind of revelatory to me, because you never saw that side of Johnny in public. You certainly never saw it on The Tonight Show until maybe the second to last and the last Tonight Show, when he got a little misty.
Right.
You would see flashes of anger of him in public. But in terms of real melancholy and sadness, that wasn't very apparent. So those situations were kind of unique to me.
Is that like the key to his cool factor? I mean, part of it is that you didn't really know the man behind the curtain. Now we have Jimmy Kimmel standing on stage crying for like every butterfly he sees run over on the street. Could you imagine?
And Howard Stern makes fun of him all the time for that. I know, right? Yeah, Cecil the Lion, all that stuff. Well, that's just Jimmy. I mean, in a way, I admire that, because that's Jimmy. He's not faking it. I mean, it's, but no, Carson never would have done that, because Carson only showed us what he wanted to show us on The Tonight Show. That was part of his perpetual disappearing act, you know, the magician in him.
The name of the book is called Carson the Magnificent. Mike Thomas is the co-author. He's our guest. Carson had a way, looking into the camera, not saying anything, looking into the camera and holding it, where you just laughed. I mean, the way that he looked at the camera, the way that he interacted with guests like Diane Cannon or Angie Dickinson or Charles Grodin or Burt Reynolds. I mean, it was just playful. It was so much fun.
Yeah, he could say everything with one look. And, you know, he would do that frequently when he bombed, too. That's how he would kind of get himself out of a bomb, or he'd make a little noise, or, he'd turn to the audience and he'd bring them in. He always had this great rapport with the audience as well as his guests. The audience was like, it was a very symbiotic
relationship. We all felt like we were his friend, right?
You all felt like, yes, exactly. We all felt like we knew him, and that was part of the magic of Carson. But, yeah, just one look could speak volumes.
He would come back from a commercial, and you would see him taking a puff of his cigarette, which I love. Seeing is like, oh my god, this guy's smoking on national television.
Everybody
I can't believe
smoked.
It.
Oh, yeah. That was, I think, Johnny had a little ashtray he would pull out. It was built into his desk. And so he would, he would just tamp it down there and then go back to business.
But like, even a cigarette can help you in the timing of comedy, because it takes a beat, right? A beat to light, a beat to inhale. You can exhale at a specific moment, move your arm. Like, I think it's an extension of him. It's like another prop, another character on the show.
You're right. It kind of was, as it was a prop in a lot of movies and TV shows that day. It's something to do with your hands, and it, and it looks cool. I mean,
so cool.
Really bad for you, kids. Don't smoke.
Thanks, Mike, for that PSA. Yeah,
sure.
They don't smoke.
There.
They vape. Don't worry.
They vape. Right. Yeah. Just vape. Just get popcorn.
But
wine.
Could you
That's
imagine
fine.
Johnny vaping? Not as cool.
No, no. But he cursed those damn cigarettes till the end of his life, because that's ultimately what killed him, what he could not stop.
What was his relationship like with Ed McMahon?
I think it was closer early on, because, Ed had been his number two is on Who Do You Trust, which they did before Johnny got the Tonight Show, and then Ed went with him to the Tonight Show. And from what I know, Ed didn't really want to go to L.A. initially to do the Tonight Show when they moved from New York to Burbank. And, he wanted a raise, and Johnny basically said, I'll just find somebody else. And Ed snapped too. I think they got farther and farther apart as time went on. They weren't really drinking buddies anymore. They didn't socialize as much. Ed had his own life. Johnny had his own life. Ed was a pitchman. He always had side gigs. He was always in commercials.
Right.
Always. He was, what was he, the Budweiser guy, if I'm not mistaken?
Budweiser, he did the Star Show. What was it?
Well, he did Star Search.
Star Search, thank
afterwards.
You. Yep.
Yeah, and then he was like American Family Publishers, whatever.
Clearinghouse,
that
come on, man.
Yeah, I don't think it was the Clearinghouse. It was, because that's the one where they showed up at your house. Ed never showed
Ed's
up at
Ed's not
people's
showing
houses.
Up at people's houses.
Yeah, Ed's not going to people's houses. Happened. He wants to be in and out.
Always on the Jerry Lewis telethon, too. I love that.
Yeah, sure. So he got his profile rose and rose, because of the Carson Show. So, they had their own separate things going on.
being a comedian back in the day on Carson was a huge deal. If you got the okay sign or if you got called over to sit down next to Johnny, huge.
Yeah.
Do you write about comedians, the big ones where For he sure. made or break people's careers?
Yeah. And, it's interesting. I just did this CBS Sunday morning segment where they had Robert Klein and George Wallace on it. And to this day, George Wallace is still broken up
still
about
bitter.
Not getting called over to
right.
the couch.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if he's bitter. He's just like, what could have been
right.
if I had gotten called over like Drew Carey and Seinfeld and, select others, because your career was literally made overnight, or at the very least, you got more bookings or more business or a commercial or something like that. Sometimes you'd get a sitcom
right.
offer because Johnny had anointed
Jerry Seinfeld.
So much power.
Ray Romano.
Tons of power.
Yeah. Tim Allen. I mean, they appeared
Tim
on
Allen.
The Tonight Show, and that was the thing. You'd get a sitcom.
You'd get a sitcom, yeah, especially during the
80s
and the early 90s. There weren't that many channels back then either.
No.
So
yeah.
Johnny was a product of his talent, and what they did with that show, but also the time in which it existed, because we weren't all fragmented yet. And so when he was on, 10, 15, 17 million people would watch. And that's a huge influence to have over that section of the population.
Night after night, they'd be watching.
Night after night after
yeah.
night, not just a one-off.
Right.
5 days
a week.
I mean, we could say now everybody watches the Super Bowl and there's a billion people, but that's a once-a-year thing. Johnny was 3-4 nights a week, and so he was part of your life in your actual living room.
I want to ask you about the SNL movie, because there's a scene where Johnny calls Lorne on the night of their first show. They used to run Carson reruns on Saturday night, and he got in a fight supposedly with NBC, and NBC said, we're going to do this sketch comedy show. Is
yeah.
that all true, where Carson called Lorne 2 hours before Saturday Night Live debuted?
I think that's a bit fictionalized from what I understand, because I just
okay.
finished the Lorne book, which is terrific if you haven't read it yet, Susan
we
Morrison's
just
Lorne
had
biography.
The author on, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's fantastic. But there's a lot of Carson scattered throughout there. And Lorne was a huge fan of Carson. Like, he knew Johnny was a master. And so I don't know if that 2 hours before, that was probably just dramatic license there. But, Johnny wanted to have he wanted to pull the reruns from the weekend so he could take more time off initially. And that's how Saturday Night Live ultimately got the slot on Saturday, because Johnny would then run reruns on the weekdays. Or he would have a guest host as well, so he could work 3 days a week, which most of us would love to do here, I'm sure.
Didn't he have Mondays off, too? He had Mondays off?
Yeah, it was Monday and Tuesday. I want to say Monday was guest host, Tuesday reruns, but it left Saturday open for Saturday Night Live to ultimately take off and explode.
What year did he have his last show? How many years ago?
That show was 92, May of 92.
May of 92, and here we are today talking like it just happened, man. I mean, we're infatuated with Carson.
Yeah, he goes through everybody who does it now, though. They all do what he does, essentially, just, in their own way.
Mike Thomas, the name of the book is called Carson the Magnificent. Mike, continued success, man. It's great to see you on Zoom.
Thanks, Pete and Lisa. I appreciate it.
More of the Pete McMurray Show next.